Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kavita Akhvai. A 30-year-old dictatorial rule, undone by an 18-day revolution, reached its climax for the man who was once on top. Former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak was given the life sentence for his role in the killing of protesters. As for his sons, cleared of corruption charges and charges against security officials, also dropped, enough to spark the anger of Egyptians who slammed these verdicts. In this news analysis, we will take a closer look at the political ramifications in a country that is going to have presidential elections in about 2 weeks' time.
A court in Egypt has sentenced former President Hosni Mubarak to life in prison over his involvement in the 2011 deadly crackdown on countrywide protests against his rule. Relatives of the victims of Mubarak's crackdown clash with security forces at the court after the verdict is read. Similar clashes have happened outside the court too.
It's an unsatisfactory verdict. The hearts of many parents of the martyrs are aching. There is sadness and sorrow everywhere. Of course, we are not happy with the verdict.
Muslim Brotherhood's candidate in the runoff vote has slammed the court ruling. Mohamed Morsi is calling for the retrial of Mubarak and his henchmen. The other candidate in the vote, Junta's favorite Ahmed Shafiq, has, however, defended the verdict. What's angered many Egyptians even more is the acquittal of Mubarak's sons, Gamal and Ala.
The ruling is invalid when the ousted president is sentenced to life imprisonment when he's 86 years old. This is unimportant. And when his interior minister, Habib al-Adli, is sentenced to life imprisonment when he's 76, this is also unimportant. But when his children are acquitted, this means that there are hidden players in the verdict and the country once more.
Meanwhile, a key and shadowy henchman of Mubarak who's been left out is his intelligence chief, Omar Suleiman. The man called by the U.S. intelligence files, torturer-in-chief, disappeared from the public following Mubarak's ouster. Suleiman, who was Mubarak's intelligence chief for 20 years and his only vice president, played a major role in the clampdown on dissent in the country. And he's also said to be behind many decision-makings in Egypt right now, more than a year after the downfall of the former regime. Mubarak ruled Egypt with an iron fist since he took over power following his predecessor Anwar Sadat's murder in the early 1980s. In January 2011, thousands of anti-government protesters took to the streets during a Tunisia-inspired demonstration to demand Mubarak's ouster. As expected, Mubarak responded with a brutal repression that claimed the lives of hundreds of people. With Mubarak sent to the Toura prison in Cairo, many Egyptians now wonder if the man who brutalized them for decades has got the comeuppance he deserved.
So is justice served? Let me introduce our guest to find that out. From the Pan-African Newswire, Abiyomi Azikiwe joins us from Detroit. We have journalist and writer Ali El-Kabani who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Ali El-Kabani, first to you. Egyptians, Egyptian revolutionaries, political forces, they were all shocked over these verdicts. Were you shocked?
Absolutely. Everyone was shocked because that shows clearly that the verdicts and the winning of Ahmed Shafiq in the first round of the presidential election, that there is a conspiracy of the counter-revolution and it is succeeding. One cannot imagine how can a judge find Mubarak and his interior minister guilty of killing the martyrs of the revolution and release and find innocent those who implemented the orders and they killed those martyrs. There is something wrong actually in the prosecution, in the judicial system, and a judicial reform have to be established in Egypt, and a trial for Mubarak, his interior minister, and the six aides of the interior minister should be tried again. Also, it is ironic that he dropped the case of corruption against Ala and Jamal Mubarak just because the time limit elapsed and he leave them innocent or release them to enjoy the money they looted from the Egyptian people. As I understand the Egyptian law, there is no time limit when people loot the money and commit corruption and get the money out of the Egyptian people and the Egyptian state. So this judge actually maybe is living outside Egypt in an ivory tower and not knowing what's happening, and he does not realize that the Egyptian people with their revolution, they demand justice. And justice has to be seen to be applied in the case of the aides of the foreign ministers who killed the Egyptians, and in the case of the two sons of Mubarak who looted the Egyptian money. And how did they build their wealth if they didn't use the power of their father to loot it from the Egyptian people?
Those are very valid questions.
The situation is not very sad. I would say it is a big joke, these verdicts.
Well, let's find out if you can... You can tell us, perhaps, Mr. Azikiwe, because we have a number of verdicts here. We have Mubarak, his son, Habib al-Adli, and some security officials. Let's talk about the security officials, six of them. Charges were being dropped there. I mean, it appears that that's not just. So how was this verdict reached? Because some are speculating, well, perhaps there's some political influence or some type of influence, perhaps you can tell us, that maybe SCAF exerted on this, which then hence puts the question of the validity of this judicial system that reached this verdict.
Well, it definitely appears to have been strong political influence in regard to this verdict. It's almost reprehensible that Mubarak would be given a life sentence. And then, of course, his two sons, one of whom was going to be his heir apparent, has been acquitted, along with, as you mentioned, the security officials who were, in fact, in charge of implementing these draconian policies that were carried out last January and February. It's remarkable, however, that the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces and the other people who, are, in fact, are in charge of the political system now in Egypt could not have anticipated the public reaction to these verdicts. Immediately, people have gone out into the streets and they have demonstrated against the justness of these verdicts. And I think these demonstrations will continue. The problem is that even if Mubarak is given a life sentence, he's already in his mid-80s, and it really doesn't speak well to the whole question of national reconciliation inside of Egypt itself. People are already angry as a result of the turnout, as well as the results of the first round of the presidential elections, where it appears as if the two political forces that have largely dominated Egypt over the last six decades are now going to be involved in the runoff. The Freedom and Justice Party, which is allied with the Muslim Brotherhood, and of course the military as represented by Ahmed Shafiq. The turnout for the election was clearly an indication, with 46% of the electorate coming out to vote. It's clearly an indication that people are not satisfied with the direction that things are going in politically in Egypt. Now, of course, with these verdicts, it's going to be even more apprehension leading up to the second round or the runoff to the elections that's going to be taking place on the 16th and the 17th. So it's still not a situation that bodes well for national reconciliation as well as establishing some type of social stability inside of Egypt.
Ali Al-Khabani, our guest there, Mr. Azikiwe, talks about how this may parallel in some sense the results that came out based on putting Ahmed Shafiq and Mohamed Morsi into the elections, that there are going to be political repercussions, basically the polarization that many are talking about, but in turn how SCAF, having Ahmed Shafiq as their candidate. And of course, we can see perhaps that this verdict is a reflection of still the military having control in some respects over the systems in the government, such as the judiciary system. Do you have that reading? Do you agree with that?
Certainly. But I have to admit that the intelligence of the Egyptian people supersedes the intelligence of this military council and the members of the counter-revolution, which we can see their fingers playing clearly in the political arena in Egypt. The people in Egypt know that Mubarak is coming in a private plane to take him to court, and he was staying in hospital. And if the likes of Ahmed Shafiq win in the second round, Mubarak will stay in hospital for a short time, and then either he will be pardoned or his sentence will be cut short. So the Egyptian people know this, and they demand qisas. They demand that Mubarak and his foreign interior secretary really are, the ruling should be capital punishment. And also those who implemented their decisions have to be retried and justice have to be applied. So they tried actually to help Shafiq by giving a Mubarak life sentence, but the Egyptian people, as I said, are intelligent enough not to be fooled by this ploy by the military council, and they are now restarting the revolution until justice is applied. And we could see and hear Dr. Mohamed Morsi saying that a retrial will be done after his election, and Dr. Abdulmenem Abdel Fattouh and other presidential candidates went to Tahrir Square to share with the demonstrators and protest against these verdicts. The Egyptian street is boiling. They demand justice, and they will not go home until justice is applied and a retrial is done. Someone like Hussein Salem, the business manager of Mubarak, who have been given a free hand to loot the Egyptian money and to steal the state lands and benefit Mubarak and his two sons, also the case against him was dropped. So all the corruption is forgiven, and those people who really damaged the economy of Egypt are left free to enjoy the wealth they looted. The other important point is that Mubarak have been tried on one crime, killing the martyrs during the 25th of January revolution. But actually this uprising and this revolution were launched against all his crimes against the Egyptian people. So he should be tried for all his crimes, not only the latest one during the demonstrations and the uprising of January 25th.
Mr. Azikiwe, there's a point that comes up here that it appears that the ruling military council is not taking efforts and steps to purge the system, as Egyptians are saying, remnants of the old regime. We're also looking at Omar Suleiman, who's still running around, and of course he was part of the old regime. And of course, and even Ahmed Shafiq. Why is it that those steps are not being taken? Because, after all, these men are still one running for the presidency and the other one wanted to run for the presidency, can still perhaps steer directions politically inside Egypt. And not to mention that, you know, they're going to influence Egyptians in one way or another. What is that a reflection of? A, them not taking the steps to purge the system, and B, that these remnants are still there, that, of course, different organizations are working with them.
We can only assume that the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces still have a tremendous amount of influence in regard to the overall political system and economic system in Egypt. Even if we look at the composition of the Presidential Electoral Commission, obviously the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces was instrumental in appointing all of these members. Even when they announced the election results, they indicated that the army was the guarantor of the stability and national security of Egypt. This is obviously an unfolding revolutionary situation that we're facing now in Egypt. You mentioned Omar Suleiman. He was designated by the corporate media in the United States as being, quote, the CIA man in Egypt, unquote. So therefore, he has not been seen at all over the last several months. And this, of course, is something that is quite surprising to many people who are looking at the situation in Egypt from the outside. Also, if we look at the role of the Egyptian military forces in backing Ahmed Shafik, who many people in Egypt feel should have been barred from participating in the national elections because of his connection with the previous military government. This is a government that's been closely allied with the United States. It's a government that has maintained a separate peace agreement with the State of Israel. It has also supplied natural gas resources from Egypt to the State of Israel. It's a government that does not have a lot of popular support inside of Egypt itself. So it's going to be really a challenge on the part of this SCAF to maintain any type of credibility when we have the verdict that we had today, when you have the discontent over the recently held first round of the national presidential elections, and we have a continuation of basically the same domestic and foreign policy in regard to their alliances with the military, the role of the military within Egyptian society, and also its foreign policy in relationship to Egypt, in relationship to Egypt's relationship to Israel as well as the United States.
Okay.
So all of these factors are going to have to be taken care of if there's going to be any real stability in Egypt.
Let me introduce Shima Helmi. She joins us from Egypt's capital, Cairo. She's a human rights activist. Let's get her thoughts on this. Shima Helmi, welcome. Are you in shock over the verdicts? Tell us your reaction, please.
Well, actually, to be honest, I wasn't shocked. From the beginning, it was obvious that a trial supervised by the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, who are Mubarak's men, will result in what we have seen today. I didn't expect them to accuse Mubarak of anything more than what they accused him of today. I'm not surprised of the fact that Adli's assistants were also freed, almost. Thing is, you know, Supreme Council of Armed Forces are Mubarak men. They served in the military next to him for years. So why should we expect anything else coming out of this?
And if I could ask you, Shima Helmi, does the feeling I get from you that the military council still has a hold based on what I'm interpreting from you, does that deter you from going out and voting?
From the beginning of the elections, the parliamentary elections and also the presidential elections, I decided to boycott the entire process because it's supervised by the Supreme Council of Armed Forces and the same electoral committee that supervised all the elections in Mubarak's time. So looking at the results of the first round and having to choose between a Muslim Brotherhood candidate and a member of the Mubarak's regime makes me much more confident that I shouldn't have taken part in this process from the beginning. And also coming from the square right now and looking at the huge turnout in the square and all over the country of Egypt, I was pretty surprised that these are the same people who took part in the elections and voted and lined up to vote. But now, with the results and having to choose between a lesser of two evils and looking at the outcome of Mubarak's trial, I don't really understand why did people take part in the process at first place and now they are protesting against Shafik running for presidency.
And let's talk about that because that's another verdict that's coming up, Ali Al-Kabbani, and that's on June 11th when there's a key case that's going to be examining the constitutionality of that law. It's the political isolation law. Former Mubarak era officials of running. Ali Al-Kabbani, is this a sign of how that ruling is going to turn out regarding Shafik? And if it's going to allow Shafik to run, if that verdict turns out that way, what are we going to see happen?
Actually, the law which had been passed by the elected parliament of the Egyptian people have to apply. Anyone would rule that this law is constitutional because it has been issued by the only elected body in the Egyptian life, in the Egyptian political life in Egypt. So we have got a military council which have been appointed by the ousted president. We have got a transitional government which have been appointed again by the military council. So anything which is issued by the legislative council elected by the Egyptian people should supersede any other decision. So I expect that the court, the High Court in Egypt, will rule that the isolation law issued by the parliament in Egypt is constitutional, and Ahmed Shafiq should be banned from this election. And we have to see actually that the dissolved national party of the ousted Mubarak is still in power. We got rid of the head of the regime, but the cancerous network of the corrupt regime of Mubarak is still controlling all aspects of life in Egypt. It seems to me that it's controlling the media, the judicial system, and even the election, because that dissolved party is helping Shafiq in all the governorate in Egypt and all towns and cities all over the country.
Okay, we're running quickly out of time. Shima Helmi, I got to come to you. So given the scenario that our guest, Ali Al-Kabbani, stated, doesn't that make you in any shape or form give it some thought to go out and vote, in this case, the other candidate being Muslim Brotherhood's Mohamed Morsi, to make sure that a man like Ahmed Shafiq is not going to be elected president?
Thinking about the fact that it took us over then a year and a half to apply this law of political isolation, and then looking at the numbers of political detainees and young Egyptians who were tried in front of military courts in a few days, doesn't make me think that SCAF will allow this to happen. All the analysis that were coming in media recently from people from all over the world, I think that Ahmed Shafiq is the U.S. candidate, the CIA candidate, the person who will maintain the same regime in Egypt as it should be, for all the forces who doesn't want to see an independent, democratic Egypt in the region. I don't think that we should have waited for a first round of the election and then a second round in order to allow some law to happen. Why did they wait for so long if they are thinking of making it happen?
Okay, we're going to unfortunately have to leave it there. We're fresh out of time. Thank you very much. Human rights activist there, Shima Helmi from Cairo. From the Pan-African Newswire, Abiyomi Ezekiwi from Detroit, and journalist and writer Ali Al-Kabbani. Thank you so much from London. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Send us any comments or suggestions to newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikova Tafoyi and the entire team here in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.